I had somebody ask if they could come to class but not to the sitting part. They wanted to come to the talk and to the brunch. I said no. This person had a particularly brilliant mind. And wanted to be engaged in the one place that was of comfort, which was the mind. As long as there was a dialogue, as long as there was talk, as long as there was some kind of interaction, there was a kind of sense of self, a sense of comfort, a sense of identity. But to suddenly rob this person of that was to leave them floundering in what might be considered nothingness. Who am I without my mind? Especially if you have a brilliant mind. And I have found this true of many people. The most intelligent people are often the most intimidated by the idea of stillness, of sitting still, and in a sense, doing nothing. And when they sit still, they often find that they cannot stop the one source of their identity, which is the mind activity. And so it begins to become, in a sense, amplified by the silence. The mind becomes so active and so judgmental, critical, that it becomes a kind of torment. And all they want to do is get out of here as quickly as they possibly can. Another person that I spoke to a couple of weeks ago said they sat through the whole talk saying, I could talk better than that. I understand things more deeply than that. Somebody who really, truly couldn't listen, had to judge it moment to moment rather than just listen. There's no requirement that you make yourself separate from, better than, or lesser than the thing that's in front of you. Except the mind feels obligated to do that. The mind has to, in some way, differentiate you from everything else. And it does it in a number of ways, each of which are sort of programmed in your life, and you know them. In a certain group of people, you feel superior. In another group of people, you feel inferior. And in some places, you feel absolutely in sync. The places you're in sync tend to be your friends, because it's easy. There's a kind of meshing. But when you're feeling threatened, the inferior-superior buttons get pushed and all this activity starts to happen. And if you're in a state of absolute stillness, or in a place where there is nothing but stillness, for many people, that's a kind of ultimate threat. They actually use this to break people down, you know, in a lot of these awful sort of torture sessions they talk about. Depriving people of stimulus is one of the great torments. Because who am I without stimulus? Who am I without my noise? And so, if you haven't learned to let go of that noise, it becomes a kind of living hell for people. Because it is always on, it is always blasting for people, it is always complaining, reaching, unsatisfied, looking back, looking forward, unable to sit still. So what do you do about that? Well, one of the incredible things about coming to a class for an hour or more is that there you are, stuck in the noise of your mind. And what happens to most people who are willing to sit through this process long enough, including your own meditation in the morning or evening or wherever you sit, there is a process, and the first part of that process is you sit in your noise. The minute you sit down, it comes up for most people. It comes up. It's like it comes up as thought, it comes up as emotion, it comes up as bodily sensation, but there you are, in it. And this squirming starts, the mental, emotional, physical squirming. Let me out of here. In the beginning, this is very intense. The double breath used to be a really powerful tool because I could always do something to get out of my squirming. I could go, help me to surrender and really ask and make this effort and feel all of this stuff going on. And usually when I would take a breath, there would be this kind of rising of energy and some kind of dynamic action and activity, and I would relax and it would start to quiet me down, and I'd be kind of amazed by the double breath. I'd be amazed by the reaction to the double breath, the energy movement and the sense of alteration of my sensations of that moment. Suddenly I was in another place and I would become kind of transfixed by that, and that would start to pull me into a quieter, more subtle space. But without the double breath, if you just sit and do nothing, you will go through a period. It will be dependent upon how practiced you are, but it will be a period of noise that suddenly you realize you can't do anything about. You can't get beyond it. And something in you realizes that, and it stops fighting. You cross over a kind of threshold, and that threshold releases you in some way from the dynamic of thought and emotion and physical discomfort. It's all still there, but you're not caught by it. You're not engaged by it. You're just sort of aware of it, and there's something else going on, and that something else that's going on is a kind of peace. It's a kind of, I feel okay. In spite of everything else, I feel okay. I was describing my experience a couple of weeks ago of being on morphine in the hospital, and it didn't rob me of the pain. It didn't remove me from the pain in the sense that it obliterated the pain. It just lifted me above it so I could see it as a discrete thing. And it didn't have a hold on me. It just was there. I wasn't in its face, or it wasn't in my face. It just was there as a kind of thing. And meditation is similar to that. What happens is, all of this stuff is no longer in your face. It's just there. The noise, the discomfort, the emotionality, the worries, the fears, they're all kind of there, but they become a substrata instead of the absolute in the moment fullness of your life. They're just quietly ruminating along, and you are feeling good. Whatever that means, you're feeling good, comfortable, at ease. It's okay, the okayness of everything. And you sit back and you just go, I can do this. And then what happens in the class, for me, for most of you, I think, is it becomes really a kind of refuge, a kind of delicious refuge. You just go, and for half an hour out of your meditation, out of your day, there is this extraordinary place of allowing, of home, of settling in, of just being you. And it's so beautiful. It's so simple. But you can't get there, most people can't get there, without passing through the struggle of mind. So if you have a particularly brilliant mind, that struggle is going to be prolonged. You will sit there with unbelievable activity, saying why this experience is ridiculous. I don't need this. I'm better than this. My mind doesn't need to be quiet. It's a waste of time. Silence, what does silence do? It does nothing. It's not productive. It doesn't give me anything. You have all your reasons. You go through all of this stuff, and you sit there, and an hour goes by, and you leave the class with no sense of having found anything. You've absolutely been caught up and lost in the hell of your mind. It may not get to hellish perspective or potentiality in the hour of the class, but give it 20 years of that, or 50 years, or 100 years of all of that, and it's not fun. Something in you wants release. Something in you wants to drop that stuff. And how do you drop it? I call it the burden. The burden of your mind, of your emotions, of your dissatisfactions, the burden of whatever it is you carry with you. Everybody's carrying a burden. And I can look at everybody in the class, and I can look at myself and see the burden. It's interesting to see movies of me years ago walking around. I was always leaning forward. It was like the weight of the world was on my shoulders. That's how I lived. And I see that with so many other people, but it's not even the weight of the world. It's the weight of their something somebody said to them 30 years ago, and you know, it's some dissatisfaction with they can't have what they want. These things that happen, why was I born in this body or this configuration, or why do I have all these problems, or whatever, whatever. Sometimes it's your personal thing, sometimes it's a familial thing, sometimes it's racial, it's genetic, it's stuff we carry. We carry all of this weight or burden. Part of it is really just being alive. Being alive takes spirit, if you will, and brings it into manifestation and weight. There's a weight to the world. Gravity, literal gravity, pulls you down. And we are carried by that, we carry it. We are walking around with this stuff. What do you do with that stuff? First of all, you have to recognize it. How do you recognize it? Sit still and it will be in your face. It will be there. Your stuff will be there. Whatever it is. You may not want to look at it. You may wish to run out of the room. Fine. But it's there. It's yours. Then you can do a couple of things. One is, many of us are literally bowed over by, or weighted down, or crunched, if you will, by our burden. So you can, if you will, change your posture. Sit up straight. Put your shoulders back. Open your chest. Open your heart. Feel the trunk of your body. Feel, if you will, the chakras in alignment. Feel whole. Force it. I don't mean by force it, by push it. Allow it. Sit up straight. It's a simple thing. It's something you do. It is a conscious act to start to not be bent over by and burdened by your burden. Lay your burden down. Another thing you can do, and this comes once you have learned to straighten up, is to look at the example of, and this is a simple idea, a flower that is in the shade, that's kind of bent over. And the sun comes out, and what does the flower do? It rises up into the sunlight. The sun calls it upward, and it strengthens it, and it brings it up. There is no effort made so much by the flower in terms of its own choice. The sun compels it to awaken, to arise. Our own consciousness is like the inner sun. Our consciousness is the very thing that brings this arising into place. So if you can get quiet enough inside, what starts to happen is you become aware of being. You become aware of your own consciousness. It's a kind of pervasive presence. And when you touch that presence, what it does, it's just like the stooped over flower. Something in you rises above your burden. It just rises up. And the burden just lessens, and you are no longer bowed over by it. Not that it's not there, but it doesn't obstruct you. It doesn't limit you as a human being. You lay your burden down. So many people talk about dying as laying your burden down. But you have to understand, and anybody who does meditation understands, it ain't easy to lay your burden down. Try it. You all, if you can even label your burden, some of you can, some of you know exactly what it is, some of you don't have a clue, you're still trying to figure it out. But if you have any sense of this burden and experience it at all, try just letting it go. Watch what happens. It doesn't want to leave you. Why? Because in some ways it's a core identity. It's who you are. Your burden is you. Without your burden, you don't exist. As much as you don't like your burden, it's you. So if I tell you to lay it down, it's like saying, get rid of you. But it's not really true, because it doesn't actually go anywhere. What goes somewhere, in a sense, is your consciousness rises up out of the burden, and the burden becomes a kind of fertilizer. It becomes a kind of nutrient that feeds into this growing structure that is your awakened consciousness. People describe it very much in as the lotus flower growing out of the muck of the earth. The lotus flower has to root in this muck, and out of that muck become all of these nutritious energies that rise up, 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 up to the top of the water, and they flower above the water into the sunlight. That's the best image of our awakening consciousness. And the very strongest nutrients that you have in your life are your burdens. They are not bad things. They are not evil. They are not even torments, although you may feel them that way. Your burdens are the very thing that is the package of energy given to you in this lifetime to grow. And if you can allow that burden to relax, you know, it's like a you buy a plant or a tree in the store, and its roots are all bound up and it's in a pot. And then you take the pot away and you put it in the ground, it starts to find its way into the larger earth, if you will, and it grows. And as the roots spread through the earth, outside of the confinement of that pot and that sort of ball of canvas around it, it opens up, and it's extraordinary. It finds its way through the planet. At the same time, it draws more and more energy up through its trunk into this expansive reaching of awakening into the light of consciousness. That is exactly what you're doing as a structural being, as a human being. You are allowing your stuff to get out of the pot that you keep it in all day long. You let it go, let it reach into life, because that's where it will go. It will touch all sorts of things in life. It will touch animal life. It will touch mineral life. It will touch organic substance. It will draw from all of these experiences. It will reach everywhere. That's your daily life. And you'll take all of that, and you will relax, and you will let it rise up the trunk of your being into this greater consciousness, which is the natural unfolding of a human life. Does it happen in 10 weeks? No. You come to a meditation class and go, I got it. There it is. I got it. My roots unfolded, the trunk opened up, the flowers came out, and I'm all finished. I have never seen that, personally. But what I have seen, you know, is trees that we've planted all around our property. I don't know if you know, every tree out in the front of our house is planted. We brought them in. We created a kind of park out front. I've watched every one of those trees grow. It's taken 24 years, 25 years. But it has been an incredible thing to watch, because it's a process. And we are all organically programmed for that process. But unlike trees, we can obstruct it. And that's the worst thing about the human experience, that people can literally obstruct their own growth. Over and over and over. They can undercut it. They can gnarl up their own root system. They can keep the world at bay. They can choose not to open and not to flower, and I see it all the time. And people who come to this class, and I've really watched it over the years, slowly, because of the constant giving themselves over to, if you will, the gardener in the sky, something comes in and prunes and cuts and opens and helps take away the pot, and it starts this process working for those of us who can't figure out how to do it on our own, which is most people. I don't know very many people who are self-taught in the world of meditation. I just haven't met very many people. There are, they exist, but there are not very many. Most of us need what they call the teacher, somebody to help instruct you in this process, primarily because we live in a society where it's not even on the curriculum. It's just not there. Where do you go to find out, how do I awaken? How do I become my own true self? How do I do that? You tell me. You tell me what course you take in college, where you go that tells you how to do this. I don't know. But it does exist. There are people talking about it. They are in little groups like this. You know, there's small little groups, and there's some bigger ones. Some people get more of your attention, you know, and it doesn't matter if it's a big group or a small group. All that matters is that there is somebody there who wants to truly, selflessly help you. I mean, it's not completely selfless, because every time I sit here, I get as much as I give. And that getting is more energy for my roots, more energy for the trunk. There's more expansion that takes place in every single class, and it comes out of each of you. It comes because in serving you, I serve myself. Why? Because you are myself. You don't understand that completely, perhaps, but that's who you are. You are myself, and I am yourself. Doesn't make sense up here. Sit in your mind, you'll never figure that out. But you sit in the class and you feel you are part of something larger. We are all the same self. And each of us has a different thing to do within that role of being the self, which is ultimately a planetary role. Ultimately, all of humanity is bound in this, but we are little pockets of that humanity that are trying to grow and awaken consciously. We are trying to lay down our burdens. We are trying to feel the potentiality of our own growth, of our own arising, our own evolution. That's what we're all trying to do. And as each of us does that, we bring it a little bit more to everybody around us. And we share it with people. We touch people differently. We look at them differently. We interact differently. As we grow, other people will grow around us. It's just the way it works. You can try to save the world if you want. You can go out there and do all these things to save the world, but there's nothing that you can do better than what you're doing sitting here. Truly. You cannot save the world in any way that equals the energy of being still. You can try to save the world with your mind. And the mind has a real place in the world, obviously. I mean, great scientists have great minds. Great artists have great minds. You know, so many people have great minds. But that mind that is uninformed by stillness has a great limitation. And you see that all the time. You see great minds talking ad nauseum about nothing, on and on and on, with such precision and such intellectual comprehension, and you move this here and you move that there and it means this and it means that, but it means nothing. Because if it's not informed by the light of consciousness, it's just information. And information, I mean, sit with your computer for, you know, go online and just go on, you know, any one of those, you know, websites. It's endless. Information is endless. When do you come upon something on the computer that elevates you, that lifts you up? I mean, you can, if you choose, to go to those places that will try to do that, but mostly it's just and that's how we live. You can't come to this class only for the talk. You can't come to this class only for the brunch. You come to this class because something is happening in the stillness of the class. Something much more important than anything I could say. Something much more important than anything you could think about. It will come through in not thinking, it will come through in being. And until you learn how to be, which you would think would be the most natural thing in the world, but for most of us it's the most unnatural thing. Being is something that we are totally unfamiliar with, and yet we're being all the time. Learning how to be is what this is about. You come here to be, and it will filter into your mind, it will filter into your emotions, it will filter into your body, it will become part of you on every level, and that being will become the thing that makes you grow. Any questions? Regarding brunch? Okay.
did the sign-up sheet.
Okay.
Next week.
Okay.
I unfortunately dropped the ball last week, and I didn't invite someone to make a fruit salad, so there isn't one. But I'll do a better job.
Or we'll be without fruit. But thank you. And anybody who can or want to sign up, I will tell you, next week is the last week. I'll be here for 4 weeks. I'm going to then go to New York for 4 weeks, and then I'll be back. But class will continue, and I will encourage everybody to still come, please. But I'll be back the 9th of June. So next week will be my last class for a few weeks. Question?
Well, it's on the concept of a burden, and I don't really have a question as much as I want to understand a little bit better what you mean. You know, I mean, when you were talking about, well, you know, a burden could be a need to, it could be anything. It could be whatever is self-imposed, right? I guess my question is, say a burden is, you know, a need to inform people about the environment, let's say. So could that be considered a burden? I mean, it could be considered something that you think you're here to do as a, you know, as a life purpose, but it can be a burden at the same time.
It's all about attitude. It's about how you relate to what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And for some people, it's pure joy. That's not a burden. The burden is when it becomes more than you can carry, more than you can handle, when it becomes a frustration that the world's not changing at the speed you expected, when you look around you and you think that all your effort has been for naught. That's a kind of burden. There's so many kinds of burden. There's psychological burdens there. And I'm not saying everybody either has them or is aware of them, but life becomes weighty after a while. You know, I'm of a certain age, a little bit older than all of you, and I sit with my friends, and we're starting to talk about the pain of waking up in the morning, the literal physical stiffness of bones and arms and things that don't work, you know, and you go, oh, boy, that's a kind of burden. And if you identify with that burden and go, I can't get out of bed in the morning, then you've got additional weight on you. Yes, your bones are going to hurt as you get older, and things will be disturbing to you, but you just go, that's what it is. And you don't have to have an attitudinal sort of relationship to it that compounds the problem. You just get up and go, it's still a beautiful day. It's gorgeous. I open the blinds outside my window. I do it every morning. The sun is just out there. The garden is out there. And I just am breathless, you know. And then that other stuff just kind of goes, well, there it is. It's how you live your life. In the light of consciousness, a burden is just a burden. It's just a thing. But if you're unconscious, it's everything. Again, it's about how much in your face it is, or how in its proper place it is. And that's what you learn to do. Spiritual life is allowing everything to be in its own place, and not to be carrying stuff around that isn't yours to lug. You cannot save the world, but you can try. And if you do good work and you try to help and feel good about it, that's wonderful. But the minute you walk around feeling like, I'm no good, I can't do it, I failed, the world's still a terrible place or a difficult place or an incomplete place, then that's your burden. It's a psychological one, but it's yours. And you don't want that. And when someone says, lay down your burden, that's exactly the one. You basically have to come to a place that says, I've done the best I can. I did my part. That's all I can do. When you arrive at that place, or you reach that place, something in you is like, okay. And a lot of people get there, really. At the end of a life, you finally go, I did the best I could. I couldn't have done it otherwise. And you just make peace with it. But you can do that earlier on the road, and it makes life a lot sweeter than waiting for the last minute of your life.
I was wondering, when you're talking about internal dialogue and versus your greater self, that everyone's your greater self, and that is there a relationship between the quieting of your internal dialogue and then your greater self speaking like that dialogue?
My experience is when you get to a very quiet place, everyone around you is that dialogue. Everyone around you starts to be perceived as a teacher. Literally, everyone who comes at you, instead of you're saying, oh, they're stupid, or they're brilliant, or I don't get them, or whatever, suddenly you look at everyone who's speaking to you, even the ones that really don't make sense. Like, I always call it the cocktail party experience, you know. Why am I talking to this person? You stand there long enough, and then something suddenly goes, oh. It filters through. You realize, even through that unconscious aspect, something real got said. And everyone is that for you if you're in a place of deep openness and surrender. The world, Rudy said this endlessly, the world is your teacher. Life is your teacher. And it keeps coming at you. If you're closed down, then it's like, why is this person talking to me? And you can't wait to get away from them. And you turn away and you get to the next person. And they're just as dumb as the person before you. And then you go into the next one and you say, let me out of this party. And you drive home and say, why did I even bother? And then you end up having a whole life like that. Why did I even bother? Nobody said one thing to me that was meaningful. You know, it was like just a waste. Everybody wasted my time. That's a burden. It's a real problem. If you open up and you really have a kind of consciousness that's evolving in you, everyone is an opportunity for more awakening. Because they're all, in a way, a mirror of your own opening or limitation. Does that make sense? Anyone else? Okay, see you next week.